This is Holiday Readings and Remembrances, a series of reflections on the season by members of the Northern Michigan University community and local and area residents. Today, Bruce Closser of Marquette concludes his reading of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens.
The bell struck one. A strange voice called him by his name.
Scrooge! Come in and know me better, man! I am the ghost of Christmas present. Look upon me!
Scrooge reverently did so. It was clothed in one simple deep green robe or mantle, bordered with white fur. This garment hung so loosely on the figure that its capacious breast was bare. Its feet were also bare, and on its head it wore no other covering than a holly wreath set here and there with shining icicles. Its dark brown curls were long and free as its genial face, its sparkling eye, its open hand, its cheery voice, its unconstrained demeanor, and its joyful air. Girded around its middle was an antique scabbard, but no sword was in it, and the ancient sheath was eaten up with rust.
"You have never seen the like of me before."
Never.
"Have never walked forth with the younger members of my family?"
I don't think I have. I'm afraid I have not. Have you had many brothers, Spirit?"
"More than 1,800.
"Oh, a tremendous family to provide for. Oh, Spirit, conduct me where you will. Last night I learned a lesson which is working now. Tonight, if you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it."
"Touch my robe."
Scrooge did as he was told, and held it fast. And they went on, invisible, into the suburbs of the town, and stopped to bless Bob Cratchit's dwelling. The ghost of Christmas present blessed his four-room house. Then up rose Mrs. Cratchit, dressed out but poorly in a twice-turned gown, but brave in ribbons, which are cheap, and make a goodly show for sixpence. And she laid the cloth, assisted by Belinda Cratchit, second of her daughters, also brave in ribbons, while Master Peter Cratchit plunged a fork into the saucepan of potatoes, and getting the corners of his monstrous shirt collar into his mouth, rejoiced to find himself so gallantly attired. And now two smaller Cratchits, boy and girl, came tearing in, screaming that outside the baker's they had smelled the goose and known it for their own. And basking in luxurious thoughts of sage and onion, these young Cratchits danced around the table and exalted Master Peter Cratchit to the skies, while he, not proud, although his collar nearly choked him, blew the fire until the slow potatoes bubbling up knocked loudly at the saucepan lid to be let out and peeled.
"Oh, and what has ever got into your precious father, then?" said Mrs. Cratchit. "And your brother, Tiny Tim. And Martha weren't as late last Christmas Day by half an hour."
"Here's Martha, mother," cried the two young Cratchits. "Hurrah, there's such a goose, Martha."
"Oh, why, bless your heart alive, my dear, how late you are," said Mrs. Cratchit, kissing her a dozen times. "Sit you down before the fire, my dear, and have a warm, Lord bless you."
"No, no, there's father coming. Hide, Martha, hide."
So Martha hid herself, and in came Bob, the father, his threadbare clothes darned up and brushed to look seasonable, and Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Alas for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch, and had his limbs supported by an iron frame.
"Why, where's our Martha?" said Bob Cratchit, looking around.
"I'm not coming," said Mrs. Cratchit.
"Not coming? Not coming upon Christmas Day?"
Oh, Martha came out from behind the closet door and ran into his arms, while the two young Cratchits hustled Tiny Tim and bore him off into the wash-house, that he might hear the pudding singing in the copper.
"And how did little Tiny Tim behave?"
"Ah, as good as gold, and better. Somehow he gets thoughtful sitting by himself so much, and he thinks the strangest things you ever heard. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him in the church because he was a cripple. And it might be pleasant for them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see." There never was such a goose. Bob said he didn't believe there ever was such a goose cooked. Its tenderness and flavor, size and cheapness were the themes of universal admiration. Eked out by applesauce and mashed potatoes, it was a sufficient dinner for the whole family. Yet everyone had had enough, and the youngest Cratchits in particular were steeped in sage and onions to the eyebrows. But now, Mrs. Cratchit left the room to take the pudding up and bring it in. Hello, a great deal of steam. The pudding was out of the copper. A smell like a washing day. That was the cloth. A smell like an eating house and a pastry cook's next door to each other with a laundress next to that. That was the pudding. In half a minute, Mrs. Cratchit entered, flushed but smiling proudly, with the pudding like a speckled cannonball, so hard and firm, blazing in half a quartern of ignited brandy and bedight with Christmas holly stuck into the top. Oh, a wonderful pudding, Bob Cratchit said, that he regarded it as the greatest success achieved by Mrs. Cratchit since their marriage. Mrs. Cratchit said that now the weight was off her mind, she would confess she had her doubts about the quantity of flour. Everybody had something to say about it, but nobody said or thought it was at all a small pudding for a large family. Any Cratchit would have blushed to hint at such a thing. At last, the dinner was all done. The cloth was cleared, the hearth swept, and the fire made up. Apples and oranges were put upon the table, and a shovelful of chestnuts on the fire. Then all the Cratchit family drew round the hearth. Then Bob proposed, "A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us," which all the family re-echoed. "God bless us, every one," said Tiny Tim, the last of all. "Spirit," said Scrooge, "tell me if Tiny Tim will live." "I see a vacant seat in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die." Scrooge cast his eyes upon the ground, but raised them speedily upon hearing his own name. "Mr. Scrooge," said Bob, "I'll give you Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast." "The founder of the feast, indeed," said Mrs. Cratchit. "I'll give him a piece of my mind to feast upon, and I hope he'll have a good appetite for it. My dear, the children, Christmas Day. Well, I'll drink to his health for your sake, and the day's, not for his. A long life to him, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, no doubt." And as the scene faded, Scrooge had his eyes on Tiny Tim until the last. The bell struck 12. Scrooge looked about him for the ghost and saw it not. As the last stroke ceased to vibrate, he remembered the prediction of old Jacob Marley, and lifting up his eyes beheld a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground toward him. The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. "I am in the presence of Christmas yet to come. Lead on, lead on, time. The night is waning fast, and it is precious time to me, I know. Lead on, spirit." They entered poor Bob Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before, and found the mother and the children seated round the fire. Quiet, very quiet. The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues in one corner, and sat looking up at Peter, who had a book before him. The mother and her daughters were engaged in sewing, but surely they were very quiet. The mother laid her work upon the table and put her hand up to her face. "The color hurts my eyes," she said. "The color? Poor Tiny Tim. They're better now, and I wouldn't show weak eyes to your father when he comes home for the world. It must be near his time." "Past it, rather," Peter answered. "But I think he has walked a little slower than he used these last few evenings, mother. They were very quiet again. At last she said,
"I have known him to walk with... I have known him to walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder very fast indeed."
"Oh, so have I," said Peter, "often. And so have I," explained another.
So had all.
"But he was very light to carry, and his father loved him so that it was no trouble, no trouble. Oh, and here's your father at the door."
She hurried out to meet him. And Bob, in his comforter, he had need of it, poor fellow, came in.
His tea was ready for him on the hob, and they all tried who should help him to it most. Then the two young Cratchits got upon his knees and laid each child a little cheek against his face, as if they said, "Don't mind it, Father. Don't be grieved."
The ghost of Christmas yet to come then conveyed him to a churchyard, walled in by houses, overrun by grass and weeds, the growth of vegetation's death, not life, choked up by too much burying. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. Scrooge crept toward it, trembling as he went, and following the finger, read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, "Ebenezer Scrooge!
No, spirit, no, 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 no! Hear me! I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been but for this intercourse. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me, I may sponge away the writing on this stone." In his agony, he caught the spectral hand. It sought to free itself. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. Yes, and the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in. "I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and the Christmas time be praised for this. I say it on my knees, oh, Jacob, on my knees." His hands were busy with his garments all this time, turning them inside out, putting them on upside down, tearing them, mislaying them, making them parties to every kind of extravagance. I don't know what day of the month it is. I don't know how long I've been among the spirits. Oh, never mind. I don't care. He was checked in his transports by the churches ringing out the lustiest peals he had ever heard. Clash, clash, hammer, ding, dong, bell, bell, dong, ding, hammer, clang, clash. Oh, glorious, glorious. Running to the window, he opened it and put out his head. Oh, sweet, fresh air, merry bells. Oh, glorious, glorious. What's today? Cried Scrooge, calling downward to a boy in Sunday clothes. Eh? What's today, my fine fellow? Today? Why, it's Christmas Day. It's Christmas Day. I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. Hello, my fine fellow.
Hello? Do you know the Poulters in the next street but one at the corner?
I should hope I did.
An intelligent boy, a remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there? Not the little prize turkey, the big one.
What? The one as big as me? What a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him.
Yes, my buck. It's hanging there now.
It is? Well, go and buy it.
Walker!
No, I am in earnest. Go and buy it and tell him to bring it here that I may give him the direction where to take it. Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes, I'll give you half a crown. The boy was off like a shot.
Ha ha! I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's. He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim. Ha ha! There never was such a joke as sending it to Bob's will be.
But he was early at the office the next morning. If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late, that was the thing he had set his heart upon. And he did it. Yes, he did. The clock struck 9. No Bob. A quarter past. No Bob. He was full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. Scrooge sat with his door wide open, that he might see him come into the tank. His hat was off before he opened the door. His comforter, too. He was on his stool in a jiffy, driving away with his pen as if he were trying to overtake 9 o'clock.
"Hello? What do you mean by coming in here at this time of day?"
"Oh, I'm very sorry, sir. I am behind my time."
"You are? Yes, I think you are. Step this way, sir, if you please."
"Oh, it's only once a year, sir. It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir."
"Now I'll tell you what, my friend. I am not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore I am about to raise your salary. A Merry Christmas, Bob. A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family. And we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop, Bob. Make up the fires and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit."
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all, and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh and little heeded them, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happens on this globe for good, at which some people did not have their fill of laughter at the outset. And knowing such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins and have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him.
And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, every one.
Holiday Readings and Remembrances is a production of Public Radio 90, WNMU-FM, Marquette. If you'd like to hear today's feature again or share it with a friend, go to WNMUFM.org. I'm Nicole Walton. Happy Holidays.